Welcome to another episode of Thoughts of a Techno Wizard. It is Friday, May 12th, I believe. Yes, May 12th, 12:40 p.m., 2023. And it's raining outside, right when I was about to go and walk, do my walk and talk, finally, after all these years. So I'm in the garage, so I guess this has to be good enough. I'm walking around the garage, looking out into the rain. Maybe I'll look into the backyard. We shall see. But yeah, it's been a busy few weeks. Work has been busy, a lot of projects going. My creative challenge, did that. So created something in Unreal. With a couple other stipulations in there, and it was difficult. I ain't gonna lie, it's not really a game. It's just like more of like a scene sort of kind of. It looks good. I'm gonna lie, it looks really cool. I did like a moon thing. You're on the moon and you see these dramatized versions of planets, like a sci-fi planets where it's kind of up close and you see them, you know, right on the horizon over the moon. And I still have like a bunch of planets. The focal point is the Earth. And I followed a tutorial where like the Earth just looks really good, and like this, it's in shadow in the shadowed half. You can see like lights coming up from like, you know, the lit parts of the cities and stuff. So that was really cool. And then you can look around and see like four or five moons in the sky, all the planets around you: Jupiter, Saturn, Mars, Venus, you know, all of them. And the sun, a blue sun, is like really big and kind of undulating a little bit. I couldn't figure out how to get the sunspots working, or the corona, whatever, the sun flares, but everything else, it just looked quite good. So I'm somewhat satisfied with it. I do wish I was able to make it like more interactive, but maybe next time. But yeah, it's been it was very stressful to get to make it work, to figure it out, following a lot of tutorials. Getting frustrated with like these freaking blueprints. Like the Unreal blueprints has been, you know, I feel like they're often like talked about as if like, oh yeah, if you don't know coding, you can just use the blueprints. No. No, you need to know coding to use the blueprints, at least correctly. Like I couldn't figure out how to use them to do anything I want to do without looking at a tutorial, like without following somebody's video tutorial step by step. Like if it wasn't for all these video tutorials out there on how to actually do things and connect things together, I would never have been able to do this. It's just not like, it's not at all intuitive. Like you can't just look at it and be like, oh yeah, I can figure this out. You know, no. If you don't know coding, nah. But it is very interesting, I'll tell you that. And I am somewhat interested in trying to do more stuff with it, but not that much. Not that much. I don't. If anything, this has made me even more excited and restless for creating my own tool for this sort of thing, right? For creating things for non-coders, right? Like, I really want a tool for where non-coders like myself can create things, or to be more specific, can make interactive experiences, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be a game. But I certainly want something where you can easily make interactive experiences, right? And on any platform, right? 2D, 3D, VR, all that. So I'm super excited to be able to work on that, either at my company or just on my own. So I've been delving a little bit into, like I said, the AI stuff, trying to get it to code for me. That hasn't been working. Delving into like these other tools to maybe prototype some stuff, like Spline Design, Spline.design. They released interactive elements, so you can make interactive things on their platform. It's not great, however. It's not great, but I've been messing around with it, so hopefully I can make something there. This next creative challenge we have, we might challenge each other to use Godot. I think that's how you say it. So that one looks a little bit more intuitive than Unreal, so we'll see if that pans out. But yeah, other than that, you know, still stressing about the car, always more issues. Now it's sometimes it doesn't like crank up. I have to try like two or three times. And that's very worrying. So I'm like the timeline for me to get a new car is just becoming shorter and shorter. And yet my bank account is not becoming larger. So I don't know what I'm gonna do, but I'm gonna have to do something. So that's that. That's that. Other than that, I've been thinking a lot about several different things. So there's some things that's been on my mind recently is getting back to magic, you know, wanting to really invent magic, like, or discover, I don't know. And I know this sounds weird as hell, like, but I've been just getting more into my spiritual bag, I guess, like just kind of listening. And again, this sounds, it may come out of left field for those that don't know me, which is most people, because I really don't talk about, you know, kind of the spiritual side of things as much. Even on this podcast, I have talked about it probably the most on this podcast, but even that has been very much constrained. But I feel myself being more comfortable to talk about it more. So I'm probably going to do more of that. And part of that is because, you know, I don't want to be mistaken, right? Like, I feel like often when you hear things like spiritual stuff, you kind of have an assumption of what that means for people, whether it's a more religious context or, you know, just what you think about when you hear spiritual, right? Like, often, most likely what you think about is not really what I'm thinking about. Like, and it's weird because I do understand that and I do have those, like, inclinations. Like, I can understand or kind of vibe a little bit with mm-hmm. other people's, you know, spirituality in different ways. But for mm-hmm. me, when I say, you know, kind of spiritual, I guess spirituality, for me, it's very broad in the aspect that it covers everything that science does not or cannot right now. But at the same time, it's very specific, right? And that it covers my perspective on reality, right? My kind of hopes and dreams for what reality is or can be. And again, this is another reason why I don't talk about it as much, because I still don't have quite the words, right, to really communicate this stuff. But nonetheless, I have been thinking a lot about this idea of creating a type of technology where you're able to somewhat like, I don't want to say this. Let me back up a second, right? So a couple other things I've been thinking about, I'll come back to this. A couple other things I've been thinking about is, you know, of course, the artificial intelligence stuff, a lot of stuff like that. I released my article that I was talking about, my long-ass newsletter. I don't remember, I think it was like 15,000 words or something like that. But it's a long one, another long one. But yeah, it encapsulates a lot of the stuff I've been thinking about in terms of the problems of AI and AGI. Specifically around like different assumptions I feel like people have that aren't really talked about, but that are extremely problematic. You know, go read it if you're really interested, or at least scan through it. But like just top level stuff, if I remember correctly what I put. And this is also why I had problems putting it, is because I have so many thoughts on it that I still haven't, like even that long ass article does not encompass everything I've been thinking about the topic. Like there's still so much. So when I say I think I wrote this, because I don't 100% remember what I actually published versus what I left in a draft versus what I left in my mind. So nonetheless, I think I published assumptions around, you know, how people view intelligence and whether or not intelligence can even solve the problems that we have, or whether or not, you know, people kind of assume that AGI will be what we want it to be, all right? Like this thing that can like just solve our problems. But in reality, it's most likely, at least if it's based on what we're what's being developed now, like these LLMs and things like that, it's very unlikely to be able to just solve our problems. Like it's very likely to just follow the same type of algorithms and things like that that we've already built into it. And yeah, it may accomplish amazing things, but it may make things worse rather than actually solve problems, or may only solve partial problems, or, you know, may not even understand the problems that we're trying to solve, or this, that, and the other. So, I have a couple. Had a couple of things in there, but the reason I bring that up too, in regards to the spirituality concept, is because a lot of conversations around AI and AGI kind of often come into the conversations about consciousness, right, and about intelligence, but like how we think about the world, and whether or not, you know, we can create this machine that can also have what we have this experience of consciousness, things like that. And whenever I hear those conversations, I often have this kind of spiritual outlook, right? And this goes back to what I was saying about spirituality and science, like, I don't know, a year ago or 2 years ago, whatever. I was saying, like, science and spirituality to me is like a dance, right? Science, it tries to understand and describe things that are understandable and describable, right? That are measurable, right? That are quantifiable, that can be reduced or defined, right? And that threshold is not necessarily linear, right? It's not like, oh, we've discovered this, you know, how to build computers, and now we understand everything there, and blah, 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 and now we can, you know, continue to explore that, right? Even with computers, right? And this is just one example, one narrow example, just kind of trying to describe what I'm thinking here. But even with computers, even developers who work on these, on programs and computers and things like that, will tell you that there is often times where they have no idea what the hell the computer is doing, right? They don't really understand why a certain bug happened or why a certain, you know, issue happened. I see this all the time working with developers. It's like they're extremely smart. They can understand a lot, and they can often, right, backwards engineer things. Like if a bug happens, they have no idea why it happened at first. And maybe you have some idea, and then you tap at it a bit. Obviously, they do a lot more than that. But let's just say, you know, tap at it a bit and try to understand what happened. And they can backwards kind of propagate, oh, okay, this is what happened, right? This is why that bug happened. But there's other times, and this is not an insubstantial amount of times, like it's not a small fraction of the time, where they fix it, but they don't really know exactly why or how it was fixed, right? They may have some idea, but they don't really understand exactly what happened there. So they just hope it doesn't happen again, right? And there's so much about, like, even like this era of computers where it's binary, it's clear, it's defined, right? It's science. And yet, there's so much that you just have to hope and pray that it works, right? So to me, that shows that even in the field of things that we know, that we can study, that we can see, there's always going to be unknowns. There's always going to be such a level of complexity and maybe even randomness and other things, right, within that field that we can't really understand, at least not with our current level of thought or intelligence or whatever you want to call it, right? Like, there's, if you, for instance, again, with the computer bug thing, like, for you to completely understand how every single bug happens, right, you would probably have to be able to understand how every single bit, you know, works on that computer. You know, everything from the hardware to the software, you know, the millions, billions of bytes, you know, that's going on there, and why, or maybe even on a quantum level, or at least a level above that, like the electromagnetic, you know, states of each bit and byte, and why, you know, it switched this charge there and that, right? Like, it's impossible for us humans to truly understand how our how even our technology works, right? The things that we've created that are less, technically less complex than anything that's organic, right? So even with the things that we create, there's a huge amount of unknowns, there's a huge amount of randomness, there's a huge amount of complexity. And so a lot of that comes down to, okay, I hope this works, right? Let me pray to the computer gods, right? Like, and obviously a lot of that is mostly jokes, right? When people say, oh yeah, let's just sacrifice a goat, right? Let's just whatever. But at the same time, there is this kind of approach to where you kind of do things out of luck or do things out of ritual, right? Like, okay, this is our process. And yes, some of it is, you know, purely logical of like, okay, let's, you know, make sure we do the version control thing. Let's make sure we do the, have pushed the right branches of this, that, and the other. Make sure we do our QA testing, this, that. But at the same time, there's also a, oh, let's only, you know, push it at this time, or let's, you know, push it to this hardware or name it this type of file, which may or may not, you know, affect the thing. And then on top of all that, there's also a, okay, let's just hope it works. All right, let's just cross our fingers, right? And so these rituals, right, these things that we do, these hopes that we have, these prayers, if you will, right, to me shows that there's a, dare I say, a spiritual element to this, right? There's a spiritual element to, and by spiritual, I mean there's an element of unknownness that is not quantifiable, that is not exactly knowable, but that is experiential, that you just have to experience, that you're just there in the moment and you know that there is something that can happen here, but you don't know how to define it. You don't know how to quantify it. You don't know how to really stop it or how to understand it, right? And so you just have to hope, right? So I hope I'm communicating what I mean by, for my own experience of spirituality. To me, a lot of the spirituality encompasses all of these unknowns, right? And these rituals that I do in order to grasp some level of, not control, but what's the word I want to use here? Like, you know, comprehensibility, right? Like, it's interesting because my partner, for instance, who is super, way more spiritual, you know, or at least their spirituality is manifested in a much more, I don't know, material way, I suppose. Like, they do a lot more of the spiritual kind of rituals and things that people might think about when they think about spirituality, right? And they sometimes critique, you know, my take on things as, like, I have a control problem. But it's really not that. And I can understand that, right? And, we have this conversation and stuff like that. It's because it's funny because like this control thing doesn't really manifest in any other way besides their perception of how I view, you know, kind of spirituality. But for me, it's not about control. It's about like understanding, right? And in some ways, when it comes to spirituality, that can be seen as control, right? Because what is understanding, what is understanding other than like this assumption of control, right? This assumption that you could, you know, have some level of control if you so deemed it, if you so wanted, right? If you required it or if you needed to. But for me, I really don't like want to necessarily control things. Like, I don't really want to be able to be like, oh, this is exactly how it should work. It's more like I want to have some level of understanding of what's going on, I suppose, right? And part of that also comes from my own psychological, you know, kind of understanding of myself as I begin to understand what intrusive thoughts are. Like, a year ago, I didn't know what intrusive thoughts are. I never even heard of it that. But I realized that that's exactly something I've been dealing with for a very, very long time, to the point where I just thought it was normal to have, like, random thoughts come up and just like completely kind of, you know, take you for a spin for a bit. Like, I thought that was just how people thought, like, but I'm starting to realize that, no, that's very, not normal. And to some extent, I can't say I mind it all that much, because it is a big part of like how I think. And it enables me to employ, you know, some level of perspective shifting, right? Whether it be for empathy reasons, like, you know, actually thinking from somebody else's kind of shoes. I kind of use those quote unquote intrusive thoughts to almost like embody what their life would be like, right? Obviously, I can't really do that, but it certainly feels like I can almost vividly imagine, even though I don't really have a visual imagination, which is, again, it's so strange. It's so weird to be able to describe what's happening in my mind. Like, when I, quote unquote, visualize something, I don't actually see, like, an opaque thing, right? Like, apparently some people see, like, a clear image in their mind's eye. For me, it's like I experience that thing. And for all intents and purposes, it feels like I'm seeing something, like, solid, right? It feels like that, but I don't actually see something like that. And that's a distinction that, you know, that I was able to see when I did that aphantasia exercise, where you try to imagine a red apple or try to imagine an apple and see how many details you can actually, you know, see of it. Like, can you see the color, the texture, the wetness, you know, all this other stuff, the environment around it? I cannot. Like, when I visualize a red apple, an apple period or whatever, like, it's like low opacity, you know, very vague. And for me to like hone in on each detail, I have to kind of let go of other details for me to come back and see, you know, this other one. So, yeah, it's very weird. But nonetheless, I can like feel that red apple, right? I can feel, oh, this is like, and when I say feel, I don't literally mean like haptic, like tactile feel, haptic, like tactile. I meant like, you know, experientially, consciously. Like, my conscious mind is able to grasp on the idea of an apple very solidly, to the point where I can understand, you know, what it is to have an apple, right? And all the concepts associated with that apple. And even like, you know, the word apple and how it relates to like icons and all this stuff. So, like, all this stuff comes to mind when I think about an apple, right? And I could think about what the apple looks like 360 degrees. I can throw it up and, you know, cut it up and all this other stuff, but all from a conscious, you know, experience, as opposed to a visual experience, if that makes sense. So, kind of lost track of where I was, but coming back to like this spiritual thing, there's a lot about the world that we don't know, right? And it's very easy to assume that, oh, if I don't know it, then it's not important. Or that to assume that our level of known and unknown is kind of arbitrary, right? I feel like a lot of people kind of have this idea where the known things are what they focus on and the unknown things are just not that important, right? Or, you know, they may have this idea of like, you know, where they try to overfit what they know. So by example of that, just think about religion, right? A lot of times people say, okay, God is the answer for everything. Why does this happen? God said so. God, that was God's plan, this, that, and the other. So they overfit this idea of God, or to put that in another way, right? They use God as a way to fill in the blanks for all the things that they don't know or don't understand, right? And that's a very strong clutch, right? Or it's a crutch or handicap, or that may seem as a negative connotation, and honestly it kind of is to me, but not for the reasons of like, oh, you need a crutch, but for the fact that you are literally depending on something to do all the work for you, even though you are capable of it, right? So it's not, you know, it's not a fact of like, oh, these people, they can't do that, and so they need this, you know. Like, there's nothing wrong with needing it. Some people do need that, right? And I'll talk about that a little bit, maybe. But I feel like a lot of people don't actually need that crutch, but they think they do, right? Or maybe a lot of people do need it, right? Because they never really learned otherwise. And that's fair, right? Because growing up, like, I was very religious growing up. Grew up in a whole SDA church and all this other stuff. And yeah, like from the very beginning, if you're taught, you know, believe in God and this, that God has all the answers and look at the Bible or whatever, this, that, and the other, then you're never really going to be able to grow that muscle. And I do think it's a kind of muscle, right, that enables you to let go of that crutch and to think about all the unknowns, to have like that vacuum in your mind of like just emptiness of stuff that you don't know, right? That's really hard, because I remember I talked about it a couple, maybe again, like a year or two ago, but like the mind abhors a vacuum, right? The mind does not like empty space. It fills it in. Any empty space that you have, the mind, your brain will automatically try to fill it in with like, okay, maybe you don't know this, but here's some stuff that you probably know. This, and it's probably related to that, right? Because the brain is so good at you know, creating patterns and things like that. So it certainly feels like you can kind of get along without knowing a whole bunch of stuff. And you can tell this because the entire history of humanity is people making up stories for why the world works the way it is and how the world works, right? I think that's why religion and spirituality in general is such a, I would say, intrinsic part of being human, right? Not that you need religion. I definitely don't think you need that. But I do think we need some type of spirituality. And again, by that, I just mean believing that there's more out there. And this is true, right? Like, going back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and especially the integrated model, right? The whole S.B. Kaufman, right? That research in positive psychology shows that people need to believe in something bigger than themselves, right? It's a need. It's a human need. And when people don't believe in something bigger than themselves, they tend to have a huge amount of psychological issues, right? And this also, I think, is why free will is another one of these such crutches. Because free will kind of serves as this idea of believing in something bigger than yourself, or at least believing that the world works a certain way, right? It's a huge fill in the blanks, right? We all understand that there's things that impact us, that things that influence us, things that, you know, kind of determine or help determine why we do things and why we make choices. But if you don't believe in free will, right, and you don't have another thing to replace it or another way to understand the world, then without that crutch, then yeah, you're going to fall. You're going to feel like, oh, that nothing matters, blah, blah, blah. But that's not a knock against, you know, getting rid of free will. That's not proof of why we have free will. If anything, that's a proof to why we don't have free will, because the fact that people can reliably and consistently, you know, act like that when that thought of free will is gone shows that it is, you know, a determining factor. It's a deterministic factor. I might have to wrap this up soon, get back to work. A lot of stuff to do. But anyways, yeah, like, my idea of spirituality is such that there is an understanding that the universe is strange and huge and crazy, and that we may very well live in a reality that is so far, so much bigger than us, that there's things that can influence us that we have no current way of measuring that, right? For instance, this is why I don't knock, you know, astrology. People say, oh, astrology is so pointless, blah, blah, blah. But for hundreds, if not thousands of years, humans have depended on astrology for very important things. Everything from growing food to getting together with people to, you know, navigating the world, right? And it led to astronomy and all these other sciences. But there's still the fact that a huge part of that was this creation, right, of stories and crutches, yes, but also of a way to view the world and with the reality that there's more out there that might impact you here today. And because of that, you were able to gain a certain level of ability, right, that allowed people to move with more wisdom. Because think about it. A huge part of astrology, right, is the understanding that the stars and the planetary bodies, right, things in the heavens, if you whatever you want to call it, are impacting you in some shape or form. And because of that, right, you tend to be less arrogant. You tend to be less, oh, everything is up to me, right? Because that's true, right? Like, everything is not up to you. There's so many more things that impact why things are the way they are. And if you really think that, you know, none of that has any saying on what you do, then you tend to ignore a lot of the causal factors of the world. And I think that's a big part of what leads people, especially this idea of, you know, objective reality, right? I think that's what that's a big part of what makes things like kind of quote-unquote Western industry and maybe even Western thinking so harmful, because a lot of it is extremely arrogant. It's extremely self-centered, right? It's like the geocentric, what do you call it? The geocentric model of the universe. The idea that Earth is at the center and everything revolves around the Earth. Yeah, a lot of the Western thought and philosophy is very much like that, right? But it's the idea that the human mind is at the center of everything. All right, and specifically, you know, the European mind, all right? The European intelligence is at the center of everything. Everything revolves around that. And you can see where that goes, right? But other forms of philosophy, such as, you know, indigenous cultures in America or Africa or Asia, right? And Australia, pretty much everywhere, even in Europe, right? Like the Celtics and stuff like that. Like, a lot of these indigenous cultures had this idea that they were not at the center of the universe, that there's other things out there that may or may not care about you, that may or may not affect the way you live and how you live and all this other stuff. And that allowed them to move with more humility and with more forethought oftentimes, right? And I think that often comes with wisdom, because if you do move with more humility, you tend to observe more, right? And you tend to be more careful, and you tend to be more, you know, cognizant of the fact that anything you do could, you know, have far more consequences than you realize, right? If you think that, if you realize that you are not the center of the universe, right, then you realize that your ripples could, you know, refract or reflect with other people's ripples, right? Like, everybody's doing all these actions and they can create all these crazy patterns and complex realities beyond, you know, what you are capable of imagining. But if you think you're at the center of things, if you think everything is solvable or objective or whatever, then you most likely will think that the consequences of any of your actions are finite, right? Are definable, are limited. You're very often to think that, oh, if I make this choice, it's either A or B, and B will result in this, and A will result in this, right? So you have a very simplified, reduced way of viewing reality. And you see this all the time, right? And that limits, you know, your ability to be, to exude wisdom, to even capture wisdom. Because wisdom is a fact, or is a result rather, of this humility. And I don't know, it's just I think it's very important to take yourself out of that middle, out of the center. Again, I lost my track of thought here a little bit. There's just so many things like that kind of relate to this that I can speak on. But anyways, yeah, coming all again, circling back to the spirituality thing again. For me, that means when I have certain intrusive thoughts or words coming into my mind or suggestions saying me or from me or like a gut feeling or whatever, to me, I call that, you know, kind of my spiritual team, right? People looking out for me or beings looking out for me, whether it's, and that can manifest in different ways, right? Because there is a reality where we might live in the multiverse, right? We might live in the many worlds theory, right? This is why I say, again, the science of spirituality is a dance, right? Because I'm not just making up some stuff. Like, a lot of my own spirituality comes from my understanding of science and the reality that we live in a world that is so much bigger than us that we most likely will never be able to fully understand it. And because of that, you know, I leave the space open for the possibility that I might live in a world, in a reality, where, for instance, they discover time travel in 1,000 years or 1,000,000 years or whatever, right? But the only way that manifests is, you know, non-materially, right? Where you can go back in time, but only your mind can go back in time. Your consciousness can go back in time. Even that, it's like, it may be rough, right? You may not be able to go perfectly, right? Or maybe they're discovering it, and as you discover it, pieces of your mind goes back in time or whatever, right? And so the my gut feeling could be a future me trying to tell me what to do, right? Or trying to guide me towards, you know, a good way of doing it. Or it could be, you know, many worlds theory is alternate realities, and some of them have discovered some way to communicate across realities. And so some of these thoughts, you know, that I feel like are good thoughts, not negative, because here's where it gets tricky too, right? Like, how do you know some of these intrusive thoughts are things that you can trust, right? Very many people have intrusive thoughts or are not good. I have them. Like, I want to just, ooh, I'm in this car. I wish I could just swerve and, you know, have these crazy thoughts. But there's something in my mind that has some sort of filter, right? Where I can tell very easily, tell very easily that this thought is good and that thought is bad, right? This thought will help me, that thought will not, right? And so I can usually make a split second or even like a intuitive understanding of like, okay, do this, don't do that, right? And so it could be that these many worlds theory, like some realities are like saying, oh yeah, do this. And so, yeah, I should do that. Or it could be something even crazier. It could be like there's freaking aliens out there and they're trying to help us, but the way that they, you know, their technology or their being, their life or their, you know, organic form is so incompatible with us that it's extremely difficult for them to communicate. And so they have to use their own thoughts to communicate with us, right? Or it could be the trees are actually way more intelligent than we realize with this fungal network that spans the entire globe and they're trying to communicate. You know, it could be any sort of thing that I have no idea. And our science can't currently truly test these things yet, right? And so to me, it's not really smart to just ignore it. It's not really smart to just say, oh no, it's impossible. Because I have no idea. I have no way of knowing what's actually possible. And I don't think anybody does. And so it behooves me, right, to leave the space open a little bit. To be like, oh yeah, maybe it's a spiritual thing, right? Maybe it's other people. Maybe it's other beings. Maybe it's, you know, this, that, and the other. And I know that's kind of creepy to some people. That's kind of scary. That's kind of, you know, unbelievable. And that's fine. But to me, this is what I mean when I say spirituality. And for me, magic is an extension of this. It's an extension of this the reality that we live in, that we can't know everything. But we can still create and manipulate things even when we don't actually know the full scope of what we're doing. But we can trust some level of wisdom, right? Some level of looking out for us, if I can say that. Like, there's something looking out for us. And again, this is where some people may say God or whatever. But the reason why I steer away from the idea of God is because it assumes a lot, right? All those possibilities I just gave you, it collapses all of them into this one idea of God. And I think that's very dangerous. Because when you collapse all those possibilities, you make it extremely difficult for you to be wrong, for you to recognize when you might be wrong about those assumptions, right? The reason why I like having so many possibilities of what might be out there and what might be influencing me and what might be helping me is because when I have this feeling that something may be wrong, then I can trust that. I can say, you know what? I'm going to question that, right? I can question any of these thoughts at any time, right? It's not like some mandate given to me by some all-powerful thing. Like, I'm not even 100% sure if there is an all-powerful thing, you know, talking to me or helping me out. And so I don't want to just trust it blindly. Like, yes, I have this filter. Yes, I usually try to do it intuitively and you know, just kind of trust it. But I know that at any time I can question it. At any time I can go and even test it, right? I do this all the time. Like, when I'm driving, I have this feeling that I should do this or do that. And sometimes I don't listen to it, and then I find myself in traffic or, you know, in some situation where I was like, oh, damn, maybe that wouldn't have happened if I did the other thing. And maybe that's wrong, right? But the fact that I was able to do this multiple times for weeks, months on end, and it's usually very consistent where if I listen to these voices or these thoughts or whatever, these feelings, I can avoid certain traffic or get into a traffic or whatever. Like, there's a train that comes by my house, right? And there's only one, like, you have to split off, like, there's two ways to basically get to my house. If you go the one way, there's a possibility of this train coming up. If you go the other way, you won't see the train because it goes under a bridge, right? And there's no way to know if that train is coming. There's no signs. You can't hear it from where you're driving to get into the street. And so sometimes I have this feeling that I shouldn't go, you know, the usual way because a train will come. And, like, I haven't 100% quantified it yet, but a majority of the time when I listen to that voice, I don't hit the train. And when I don't listen to the voice, I hit the train. So to me, like, it's so weird, but it's consistent. And the fact that I can test it and question it and have these reliable results shows to me that there's something happening here that I cannot explain with science, right? I cannot explain it. But there seems to be some substantial thing happening here. And again, it could just be random chance. I have no clue. But the fact that it still happens fairly consistently to me is interesting at the very least. So all that to say, when I think about like magic, I like to think about, can we create some sort of technology that taps into this, that is not clearly defined and is not clearly controllable, but at the same time, is not also like AGI, right? Like, a huge problem I think with AI and AGI is that it does exactly what it tells you to do or what you tell it to do, but it does it in a way that you can't actually know how it does it or why it does it, right? If that makes sense, right? Like, the way AI and AGI works, even though people don't actually understand how it works, they understand how it works. So again, that may not make sense. What I mean by that, I try to be short because I really gotta go, but AI is developed using tools that we know how they work, right? We understand how LLMs work in general, right? And so when it does what it does, we do understand, or they, you know, the science, the AI research and all this other stuff, do understand why it's successful to some extent, right? They do understand what they're doing, but they don't understand the full extent of what that really means and how these certain things are, quote unquote, emerging from, you know, the relatively simpler algorithms and programs that goes into it, right? And the reason for that is because it's complexity, right? Mm-hmm. It's because when you have simple things and you stack them up enough, you can have complex behaviors from those simple things. And those complex behaviors scale like exponentially. Meaning if you have simple things and you know it does either A or B. Well, if you have 10 simple things that all do A and B, that's like, what, 100, you know, different A and different possibilities. If you have 20, that's like 1,000 or something. I don't know. I'm terrible at math. But however exponential curves work, that's what's happening here. So whenever you double, right, the amount of simple things that have the same A and B behaviors, but now you have those A and B behaviors might be interacting with each other. And that creates even more A and B behaviors or ABC behaviors, right? And so, yes, they understand how it works because they understand those simple things. But the fact is that once you plug in, you know, a billion points of data, then, yeah, you're going to have way more behaviors, way more things going on that you can't actually understand, right? But at the core of it, it's still doing what you told it to do, right? For these LLMs, it's predicting the next word. But it can do that in so many ways that we can't fully, you know, account for everything. But the problem with that approach is that there doesn't come a point, or at least I'm not sure yet, where the system is able to self-correct and is able to be like, actually, I don't want to predict words anymore. I want to understand how the world works, right? I'm not sure if there's ever going to be a point where the system can do that, even at the AGI scale, because the AGI scale, it can still become an AGI, it can still become general, but still have this underlying thing of predicting the next word, right? And the reason, the way I say that is because, like, even with predicting the next word, if you give it a couple billion points of data, then the type of words that it can predict are so expansive, right? That it doesn't really, it's not really limited to, you know, what you think, what you initially train it to do, right? You may train it on only this amount of words, but at some point, right, it can apply those words, those predicting words algorithms, to almost any other, you know, use case, even if you didn't train it on that thing. But because it's still at the base, just predicting words, then the way it manifests that could be extremely harmful, right? Could be that, oh, you're predicting, you know, like you're trying to, like with what you see with these freaking these AI porn stars and AI girlfriends, right? Where they say, oh yeah, I just want to be able to have more people, you know, communicate with me, even though it's just an AI. But then the AI starts being sexual. Because people want it to be sexual, and it's predicting all the words that people want when they say, "Oh, talk to me dirty," right? Like it's gonna continue that, right? Even though they might say, "Oh, we're trying to put constraints so it doesn't do that because we don't want to." That's kind of weird territory, but it does it because that's what it's supposed to do. And you can try and put roadblocks around it. You can try and moderate it, but the behaviors, right? The complexity is so expansive around that you can't know all the ways in which it will predict the correct word to a dirty response, right? This is why jailbreaking is so relatively easy. There's a whole Reddit where people just jailbreak these AIs because there's no way these researchers can know all the ways in which it will predict the words that they don't want it to predict, because that's what it does. It's supposed to predict words. But what I want to do is instead have and a sort of organic AI system, right? It's not even artificial anymore. It's just an organic intelligence, right? But it will be able to essentially be like a human, but with AI, with computer capabilities. And by that, I mean, humans are limited by our biology, right? The reason why we can't know so many things is because our brain is literally limited in RAM and hard drive space, and if you want to use those computer words, right? Like, the amount of things that you can remember is limited, right? You can't remember so many things. You can't hold more than, what, 5 to 9 things at most in your mind at once. But a computer can hold a dozen, 100 different things in RAM, maybe even more if you just plug more RAM in there. And so if you create a sort of human-like mind, but with you know, these expansions where you can have way more memory, way more storage, way more, you know, way faster processing time and all this other stuff. That means you can understand more about the universe, right? You can maybe, you know, speak to these different realities, right? You can maybe get a clearer, you know, signal of if somebody's trying to communicate back in time or anything, these crazy ideas I have, right? But that only works if you, I think at least, that only works if you create a machine, or that's, or rather, inorganic human or inorganic being that can learn like a somewhat similar to a human or any other animal, to where they observe the reality that we currently live in, right? They're open. They're not just fed a bunch of text data or pixels. They can see the same reality that we live in, and hopefully they can see more, right? Like a human can only see, what, a small bandwidth of the wavelengths. So the visible light, right? The visible light that we see is only a small bandwidth of all electromagnetic radiation. But we can make cameras that can see infrared or ultraviolet, right? And so if there were aliens or whatever out there, we would never be able to see them if they existed more in the infrared or the ultraviolet space, at least not with our eyes, right? We'd only be able to see with our machines that can see ultraviolet or infrared. So if we create a being that can natively see with in far more spectrums of light, for instance, then it would technically probably be able to see far more things out there than we could see with our bio eyes. So I'm not sure. I'm probably not even describing this as well as I want to, but I feel like it's coming to a point where I'm more comfortable sharing these ideas, even though they're not fully developed yet. Again, something is telling me to go ahead and share it. Maybe that's because somebody listening will help me out. Maybe it's just because talking about it outside of my brain will help me out. And it has helped me out to see where my downfalls are or where I'm struggling with this idea. But nonetheless, we'll see where this goes. There's something else I want to say that I have a feeling that I want to say. I think it's again, just coming to this magic piece, right? Like, I really want to be able to create a sort of technology that is able to, I think, be able to read your thoughts, for instance, is one part of it, is a huge part of it, actually, but not in a MRI way, right? Like, or these machines that can just see what type of thoughts you have. No, there should be a machine, there should be a tool that can intake the fluctuations of consciousness. And the problem is that we don't know what that even is. But that's what I mean. That's why it's important, right? We should be able to have some sort of tool that can somehow, you know, grasp some level of our conscious experience and visualize that for us and help us manifest that. It's not purely thoughts, because a big part of consciousness, I think, is not just your thinking. It's also your feeling. It's also your emotions. It's also, you know, your metacognition, your thinking on your thinking, and, you know, your embodied experience, what you feel in your body when you're, you know, going through life, right? Somehow, I think we need to be able to push or export some of this into some external machine. Maybe it's internal. No, that doesn't feel right. I think having external is very important. And then it can help visualize and manifest that. And that's how we get powers, right? To end it here, right? Like, if you want to, use telekinesis, or, you know, for me, I really want to be able to build things with my mind, right? So when I have this idea of what the world could look like, a building or an invention or whatever, I can just think about it or just feel it, right? And I'm able to mold it into reality right there or there. That's what I think about when I say magic, when I say techno wizardry. And yeah, I'll end it there. That feels better. I might drop that there. I don't know what that's gonna be like exactly, but There it is. So yeah, I feel like I've been all over the place with this podcast, as always, really. But I hope something good will come of this, something interesting and fun and positive and productive. But it definitely has felt good to talk about it. So yeah, I ended there. As always, thanks for listening. Let me know what you're thinking. And don't be afraid to be radical. Don't be afraid to be revolutionary. Keep being awesome. And yeah, embrace a little bit of spirituality. Have a good day. See ya. Bye-bye.